A couple weeks ago, I read a story that was pretty interesting. It's about a guy that you may have heard of before. His name is Ben Nempton. And Ben Nempton, basically a few years ago, what happened is him and three buddies got together. And they compiled a list of 100 things that they wanted to accomplish in their life before they kicked the bucket, before they died. Bucket list. And so the idea was they were going to set out on this two-week road trip and try to accomplish as many of these things as possible. And they made themselves a promise. And the promise was that for every accomplishment that they could cross off their list, they would, basically the promise was they would turn around and help a complete stranger try to accomplish something that was on their list that they wanted to do before they died. And so far, Ben and his bros have accomplished a bunch of things. Here's a few of them. Throwing the first pitch at a Major League Baseball game. Delivering a baby. It wasn't his own. Making the biggest roulette spin in Vegas history. Making an appearance on Oprah. Playing basketball. Now, these are just regular guys, all right? Playing basketball with President Obama at the White House. Reuniting a father and son after 17 years. Making a $300,000 donation to charity. Unfortunately, it wasn't the orchard. Helping a girl find her mother's grave for the first time. And he is currently trying to help a college freshman find a new kidney. Pretty cool, isn't it? And then, as some of you might know, this actually ended up becoming a documentary on MTV. And then, within the last couple of weeks, I believe, it also became a book that ended up in the last couple of weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, which, interestingly enough, was also on their list of things they wanted to do before they died. Write a book that ends up on the New York Times bestseller list. And it happened. And the book, it's a pretty cool book, actually, and it asks a question. The question it asks is this right here. What do you want to do before you die? And then what they did was they took submissions from people and included them in this book. So there's a little bit of stuff right up front. It's like, gosh, it's the kind of book I would really like to write. Maybe just a little bit up front and pictures the rest of the way through. But anyway, they included submissions from people of what they would want to do. That's on their bucket list. What they'd want to do before they die. Here's a few of them. Let me show you. One of them was somebody said, "I want to make a mark." Another person. Some of these are serious. Some are fun. You'll see. Here's one. "I want my dad to be on the other side of the bars without the orange jumpsuit." "I want to say meow during a speech." That was mine. No, I'm just kidding. Here's one. "I want to see my sister overcome her anxiety. She's only 18 and has barely left the house in 4 years. Another one. This one's pretty good. "Before I die, I want Robert De Niro to turn to me and say, 'You talking to me?'" That would be cool. "Before I die, I want to meet the New York City police officer who delivered me in my parents' bathroom because there was no time to get to the hospital." Couple more. "I want to create and name a new color crayon." Love that one. Couple more. "I want to prove to my dad that I'm not just another letdown and do something with my life." And last one is, I want to make footprints on the moon. What really intrigued me about this whole thing was not so much this documentary, MTV documentary, although that's cool. But it wasn't even necessarily this book. What really intrigued me was the story behind it all. And I want to read to you from Ben's own words how he describes it. He says this. He said, "Our mission was supposed to be a two-week road trip. The four of us never experienced it to be much more, and we certainly didn't expect to be living it 5 years later. In the beginning, we didn't tell our friends what we were doing because we didn't know how to explain it." Don't you love that? When was the last time you did something that you couldn't figure out how to explain to someone? "What we shared was really just a feeling. We were fed up and wanted something different. We decided to move forward without a real plan." He goes on to say this, "We didn't have a name for the project until Johnny," another one of the guys, "was assigned a poem in English 102 called The Buried Life. It was written 150 years ago, but spoke to the same feeling we were having at the time. The desire to unbury our lives and do the things that were important to us, not what was expected of us. And he says there were four lines that stood out from the rest in this poem that was written 150 years ago, and they're these. But often in the world's most crowded streets, but often in the din of strife, there rises an unspeakable desire after the knowledge of our buried life. And so, as you know, today we're beginning a new series entitled You 2.0. But more than this being just another series, let me tell you, my heart and my prayer and my desire is that this would actually be more of a catalyst for you. That this would be a spark, a push, maybe for some of you, a shove that'll really be felt. Because I believe that there's something within every single one of us in this room, whether you feel like you have this or not, I believe that there's something within each and every one of us that longs to go far beyond just making a living, surviving. I believe there's something within every one of us that truly longs to make a difference in this world. Something within each of us that desires to go far beyond ordinary. I think probably a lot of us, we can relate. You know, I love where he said this. He said we were fed up and we wanted something different. Some of you are right there in your life. You feel it. You wake up every day thinking about it. And then when he describes, he spoke of the desire to unbury our lives and do the things that were important to us, not that were expected of us. I read a survey the other day, and there's a lot of these surveys out there, but one in particular caught my eye. It was a survey that said that 65% of those who are employed are actively looking for another job. 65%. And 60% said that they plan to intensify their job search over the next 3 months. And then get this, those who plan to stay in their jobs say that they will do so for three reasons. One, a best friend at work, a good paycheck, and the third thing was an easy commute. Am I the only one that sees something wrong here? I mean, it's rather telling that none of the reasons listed for staying in their job had anything to do with the work itself. Nothing. None of them had anything to do with what it is that these people are spending, I don't know, 40, 50 hours a week of their lives devoted to. Something's wrong. It's like we've made it our goal to pursue job satisfaction. But is that really a great goal in life? What about job passion? I mean, what about devoting your life to something that you deeply, deeply believe in? I'm convinced that there are too many amazing people, and probably even right here in this community, who are living unfulfilled lives that are filled with unfulfilled dreams. All because normal has become our default lifestyle. Normal. Turn to the person next to you. Say to them, normal. Maybe ask them, are you normal? Are you normal? There's a neighborhood in New Orleans, Louisiana. It's called the Garden District. I want to show you some homes from this area of NOLA. It's some beautiful, beautiful homes. If you're ever visiting, you need to go there and see these homes. It's called the Garden District, and it's a part of the city that was developed between around the 1830s up until 1900. And some have said that it is actually the best preserved collection of historic southern mansions in the United States. And absolutely beautiful homes, aren't they? Now that you have those in your head, I want to show you some images of some other homes. Go ahead. Show these other ones. Okay. Mm-hmm. I know. Some of you are like, dang it, that's my house. I know. Mine too. I know. it's quite a contrast, isn't it? Now, obviously, my point here has nothing to do with where you live, your house. Don't get mad at me. We live in the suburbs, right? My point is not your house. My point is your life. And which one of these your life more or less looks like. I think probably for many of us, our lives look a lot more like the cut-and-paste suburban homes than they do the unique homes that we saw a minute ago, the distinct, unusual, different. I mean, what does your life look more like? Too many of us, we've sold out to normal. We've sold out to average. We've sold out to ordinary. And we, what's happened is we've learned to choose the path of least resistance in our lives. Whatever path feels easier, whatever path feels safest, and we've just learned to flow with the crowd. I think many of us, we become convinced that the goal in life is to fit in. I mean, think about, I don't know how it was when you were in school, when you were a kid, but when I was a kid, it wasn't necessarily about bringing out the artist out of Scott. You know, there's a reason why when you grow up, you stop believing that you're an artist. You know, the goal was let's get everybody kind of looking the same and being the same, ordinary, right? And I mean, we see it in schools, we see it in churches. Let's have 5 classes that we put everybody through, and they can come out on the other side looking all the same. I think in many ways, with the help of all those things and voices in our lives and whatever else, we've made normal our goal in life, which is so easy to do because it is such a seductive trap. Sucks us in, right? It's a trap that leads us into being the kind of people. I mean, open up Facebook if you question this, all right? Read what people are saying on Facebook, all right? Look around you in your workplace. Normal leads us into being the kind of people who end up sleepwalking through the routines of life. It leads us to become the kind of people who essentially live for the weekends. I mean, we see it all the time, right? People are more excited about the weekends. Why? Because there's not much fueling them during the week. What they're giving their lives to, they don't feel like it's making a difference. And so they're excited because on the weekends, at least they get to party and rest and relax. See, it's normal that turns us into people who talk about the future but remain stuck in the past. One day, my intentions are, I hope to, and yet we're stuck. The same old, every day. We end up becoming people who are fueled in our lives by our sense of self-worth and our titles and our things and our achievements and all of that. See, here's the interesting thing. None of us start out in life as little kids saying, well, one day I want to be normal. No, you don't start out that way. You start out like you started out how? You started out with dreams and ambitions. And yet little by little, what happened? Well, little by little, we become hypnotized by the normal life. One day I will change the world. All of a sudden it's what? I just have to get through today. We get stuck. And ultimately we end up unhappy, unfulfilled, and unsatisfied. We have forgotten that we have been made for something so much more. You were not created to live a normal life. Now, this should resonate with us on a couple of levels. It should resonate with us, as human beings, and it should also resonate with us at even a deeper level as followers of Jesus. Which really, you know, the two are the same. I mean, ultimately what Jesus does is he came to show us how to really live in the fullness of humanity, to be the humans we were created to be. And so this should resonate with us, especially as we start to learn about who Jesus was and the kind of life that he called us to. Because Jesus, look, the call of Jesus is not a call to live an average, ordinary life. No, the call of Jesus takes us far beyond that. There's a place in the scriptures, and one place in particular, where Jesus, he uses two metaphors to show us and to sort of paint a picture for the kind of life that he calls us to live. And they're both found in the Gospel of Matthew. Matthew's the first book in the New Testament. I want to read to you Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, and I'm going to read from the Message, little MSG for you here this morning. We promise you will not get a headache from it. All right, Matthew 5:13. Jesus says this, "Let me tell you why you are here. You're here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. If you lose your saltiness, how will people taste godliness? You've lost your usefulness and will end up in the garbage." Wow. Verse 14, here's another way to put it. For those of you who are more image-driven. Personally, I like the food analogies, the flavors. But I like this one too. Here's another way to put it, in case you didn't get it that time. You're here to be light, bringing out the God colors in the world. God is not a secret to be kept. We're going public with this, as public as a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket, do you? Remember that? Hide it under a bushel. No. He says, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket, do you? I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I've put you there on a hilltop, on a light stand, what does he say? What's the word? Say it again. Shine. Keep open house. Be generous with your lives. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up with God, this generous Father in heaven. Jesus is saying something so simple, yet so profound at the same time. And he starts out by using this metaphor of salt. How many salt people do we have here? You love salt. You have a problem, don't you? Like me, right? Are you quick? No. Salt. Now, we like salt, of course, because, you eat at a crappy restaurant, you need salt. Can I have some salt? Or you eat at a good restaurant, but you have a salt addiction, so you need more salt, or whatever the situation might be. Well, listen, in the ancient world, salt was a big, big deal as well. In fact, I guess in some ways, you could even say it was a bigger deal at that time. I mean, for one, in the ancient world, they started to discover some things about salt. Like, they discovered that salt acted as a preservative. So when they saw that famine was coming, they knew, like, let's preserve. We use salt to preserve so our food doesn't go bad. They discovered, too, that salt was a purifying agent to kill bacteria, right? And then they discovered, at some point, people liked it. There was something about their taste buds that resonated with salt. Yeah, salt is good. And so here's Jesus using this really powerful example that everyone knew, was very familiar with. And he's talking to, you got to keep in mind, he's talking to a very undistinguished group of people. Undistinguished. Group of people. And what he's saying to them is, okay, you are here to be salt. I want you to bring some spice to this bland world. He says, I want you to be light. I want you to bring your art. I want you to reflect the God colors into the darkness of normality. And he's saying all of that to a group of misfits. He's saying that to a group of people who often, like you and I, okay, who probably more often than not thought to themselves that there was no way that God could ever do anything great in their lives. People who, just like us, struggle at times in our lives to believe that God can actually do something with our lives. That our lives can truly make a difference. That's who he's talking to. People just like us. Yeah, but Scott, I have issues. I have, you know, dysfunctions and things. And unique, I'm unique. I'm unique. And not in a good way. Like people sometimes are happy about their uniqueness. Mine's not good. Really? Really? Have you read the Bible? Have you? Apparently not. Or you have amnesia. Because when you open up the Bible, let me tell you what you will see. All right, see, here's our problem. Sometimes what happens is I feel the preach coming on right now. Get the organ out. You ready? All right. So sometimes we look at these like these great heroes of faith, right? And all we really pay attention to is that, like, the moment, right? We see, like Moses parting the Red Sea. Wow. We see Abraham, the father of many nations. David threw down on the giant. He went WWF times 50 on the giant. We see the moments, but what we don't always pay attention to are the stories behind them. And what really went on in some of their lives. Because, man, when you actually pause and when you begin to look into the lives of some of these people who we all seem to hold up in this high regard, what we'll see is that God has always been about using messed up, insecure, sin-struggling, selfish, prideful people to do his work in this world. I mean, hardly any of them ever fit like the religious mold. I mean, man, most of them probably wouldn't even, you know, we probably wouldn't even allow most of them to be leaders in most of our churches. I mean, think about it. Here's a list. If you don't believe me, here's a list. Abraham, the dude was on Medicare when God called him. All right? Moses was a mess. He was a fugitive from justice. He had murdered a man, for Pete's sake, and now he's hiding out on the backside of a mountain trying not to get caught, not to get killed. Joseph was a slave and an ex-con. Rahab, you ready for this? Rahab was a prostitute. David was a murderer and an adulterer. Gideon was fearful, timid, scared to death. Jonah? Jonah was directionally challenged, wasn't he? He smelled too. Samson was relationally challenged, right? John the Baptist, woo, weirdo. The dude was a loner. He hung out in the wilderness eating freaking bugs. Thomas was a doubter. Peter was a failure. Matthew was a tax collector. Zacchaeus was a thief. And James and John, dear Lord, those guys needed anger management counseling, for Pete's sake. So I'm sorry. What did you say your issue was again? I didn't hear you. See, we have a lot of excuses, right? So many of the things that look, God has never been looking for perfect people to do his work. Okay, and in fact, not only has God not ever been about using perfect people, but for whatever reason, maybe just to make us feel good right now today in 2012 in this room, I don't know, probably more than that, but let's just say, for whatever reason, it almost seems as if God actually went out of his way to find the most dysfunctional people around to do his work. So see, what we think is the issue in our lives really isn't the issue most of the time. It's an excuse. Now, the issue that we do have is the issue, oftentimes, issue of fear. The issue of doubt. You ever struggle with doubt? You ever struggle with fear? I do. We struggle with our excuses. There's all these things. And here's the thing. We either will become paralyzed by those, or we can allow God to help show us how to navigate through those. That's the kind of stuff we're going to talk about. And I'm just going to warn you right now, this series is going to be uncomfortable. All right? It's going to stretch you. It's going to push you. You may walk out of here not liking me at times. That's okay. I still love you. You don't have to like me. You have to love me, but you don't have to like me. All right? Some of you, you're going to find every reason in the book why you shouldn't come to church next weekend. And the weekend after that, you're going to wake up and you're going to have a pain in a part of your body that you didn't even know you had anything in. And you're going to make a bad decision. You're going to hang out Saturday night and party, and you're going to be barfing your brains out on Sunday morning, and you need to get here. But don't throw up here. Okay? Don't throw up here. The children take care of that fine at times. No, but some of you, you're going to find every reason in the world why you shouldn't come here, which is fine. If you're satisfied with where your life is at right now, well, if that's the case, then frankly, this series probably is not for you. Go to a different church for their series on whatever they're teaching on. This one is going, this is where we're going. And if I'll tell you, if you are not satisfied, if you're not satisfied with where you're at in life, and you sense there's more in here, that's who this series is for. That's who the series is for, okay? This is a series. Well, it's a series about pushing away all the lies that we buy into, all the lies that have been programmed into our minds that we've bought into. And it's about starting to believe. I'm not even saying like you got to go from A to Z. Even if you just go A to B is fine, okay? But it's about starting to believe that your life matters. Because some of you don't believe that right now. Or you used to believe it, but you don't now. Or you believe it this much, but God wants to help you believe it this much. All right, listen, it's about believing that you are not an accident. I don't care what your parents told you. I don't care what someone else has told you. You are not an accident. There is a purpose for your life. You 2.0. All right, it's about living with this realization. Listen, that if you live a diminished life, it's not just you who misses out, but it's the world that loses. It's humanity that loses, okay? So for you to choose 1.0, for you to choose ordinary life is very selfish because it's not just about you. Yeah, but Scott, I'll never be famous or I'll never be well-known. No, listen, it's not about that. It's not about that. Listen. Do you realize there's a huge difference between fame and greatness? You know that? There's a huge difference. The two are very different. Fame is about what you do for yourself. Greatness is about what you do for others. Now look, there are some people out there who are very famous, but there's not a lot of greatness going on because everything they do is about themselves, their ego, right? But then I'll tell you, there's also people out there who are doing great things, but no one knows them. They're under the radar. Fame and greatness are not the same. Don't get them confused. So, this is a series about waking up. Some of you need to right now. This is a series about recognizing that you are needed. Listen, this world needs you. It needs you. Do you know why it needs you? It needs you because there are economies that are leaving families homeless right now. And so we need to create opportunities for work and wealth. All right, it needs you. This world needs you because there are genocides that are happening around the world right now that need to be stopped. This world needs you because there is slavery that is happening right here in this country. You don't even have to go to Africa or to Thailand or anywhere. It's happening there, but it's happening right here in our own backyard. And it needs to stop. This world needs you because there are still people who are going every day without clean water. This world needs you because there are children right here in Aurora who need to be loved. There are young people in this city who need someone to look at them and say to them, I believe in you. I believe you have what it takes. There are diseases that are killing millions that need a cure. There are relationships that need to be healed and restored. There are elderly who need to be cared for. There is art and there is beauty that needs to be created. There are futures. There are futures that need to be saved. And there are dreams that we must not let die, that we must not let go. unfulfilled. That is what you 2.0 is all about. Your life matters. And not only does your life matter, but your story matters. That's right, your story. There is a world that is waiting to be inspired by your story. And see, here's the good news. Your story is still being written. That's right. Which means it's not too late. Some of you, you're older, and so you've started to wonder, well, man, maybe the best part of my life is over. Maybe my best days are behind me. Well, you know, the answer to that question, if you're asking, are my best days behind me? Here's the answer to that. I think that it's up to you. I mean, some of you, it's because you are older that you're actually better seasoned and better equipped to have greater influence than you've ever had in your life. So you need to change your perspective. It's not about retirement, it's about refirement, right? It's about gearing up, not looking to the grave right now. George Eliot is a great quote. It's never too late to be what you might have been. Some of you need to let that bring hope to you. This is about taking a step. It's not about running out and quitting your job, okay? Don't do that tomorrow. If you do it, don't say the pastor told you to. But some of you, by the time this series is over, you're going to need to quit your job because something's going to be happening inside of you. This is about taking a step, and that is something that looks different for all of us. But here's the thing. Can you imagine what would happen if every single one of us, just even in this room right here, can you imagine what would happen if every one of us took, over these next 6 weeks, took just one step, one. Some of us might take 5 or 6, some of us might take 3, but what would happen if every one of us took just one step closer towards becoming the version of you that God created you to be? Just one step. For many of you, it's going to be a lot more practical than you think. Because over these next few weeks, we're going to talk about some things that I think are going to open your eyes, and you're going to go, man, maybe I can do this. Maybe some of you are going, I have no idea what this is. It's going to get clearer. I believe that. And yet stepping out is one of the hardest things to do. If you've ever stepped out in faith, it's the hardest thing in the world to do. But you know why? There's a reason for that. There is a reason why the you-know-what hits the fan right as you're getting ready to take a step of faith in your life. There is a reason why fear is as big as it is in your life in those moments. There's a reason for it. The reason for it is because there is something that happens when you take a step. Man, when fear is the greatest in your life, look at it. Where is it pointing you? That's what fear does. Points us in the direction we most need to go. Because something happens when we take a step. Something happens. For some of you, it's taking a step as a leader. For some of you, it's maybe saying, well, maybe I'm not a leader, but it's coming alongside someone and helping. Maybe it's some of you, it's supporting or it's partnering or it's encouraging, but it is taking a step. That is the crux of 2.0. Taking a step. Being a person who believes that they matter, who is done hiding their weirdness, and who actually believes that God might actually be able to use my weirdness and is willing to courageously take a step of faith in their lives. And see, maybe this is why Jesus always pointed us back to little children. Because I mean, look, little children, they don't struggle to believe the things we struggle to believe, right? They just believe it. It's like they haven't become smart, right? Is that what it is? They haven't become smart enough, right, to know any better. So they're still willing, right? They're still willing to believe that their life makes a difference. They're willing to embrace their weirdness. Every child, they display it maybe even too much. Right? Their weirdness. I mean, that's their art for the world, right? And they take steps of faith. Sometimes they do stupid things, but they will step out and they will do it with a ton of courage. Maybe that's why Jesus constantly pointed us back to little children. Because there is such a beautiful and innocent willingness to be everything but normal, everything but ordinary. Watch this.
Arcade is called Kane's Arcade. It's open on weekends only, and it's really cheap.
Kane does not pass by an arcade without stopping in. He loves tickets, playing games. He loves prizes. So it was only natural for him to build his own arcade. He loves to see how things are built. He takes all his toys apart to see how they work. He can't put them back together, but he takes them apart. Kane spent summer vacation coming to work with me. We sell auto parts in East LA.
My dad has a lot of boxes back there to ship parts out, so I cut them up and make my arcade games out of it. My first game I made, the basketball hoop I got at Shakey's Pizza, and it's really cool.
He taped it onto a box, and he was offering people chances to play for like a nickel. He started from that little game, and little by little, they started getting fancier and fancier, and eventually he took over the whole store.
I met Kane randomly. I had to get a door handle for my 96 Corolla, so I pulled into this used auto parts store, and I just came across this elaborate cardboard arcade. I asked him how much it was to play. He's like, for $1, you get 4 turns, but for $2, you get a fun pass. Like, well, how many turns do you get a fun pass? You get 500 turns for a fun pass. I got a fun pass.
I made this fun pass that expires in 1 month, and you get 500 plays on any of these games. Like a great deal. And I started making my office. It has like a speaker on the other side I could talk through. I got tokens, my business card, fun passes, and prizes. First prizes, I used my own toys, like the cars were my own toys. I used to like Hot Wheels when I was little.
I worked from the back office, and it kept them out of my hair all summer. He would work on the arcade, I'd work on eBay.
My next game I built was a soccer game. First of all, I didn't have no goalies. People said it was too easy, so I bought army goalies, and those are my blockers. I told them, is it easy now? It's pretty hard, so you get 2 tickets if you make it in here. I'll give it a 4-star. Hard game, challenging game. 4-star.
One day, Kane tells me, Dad, I want to buy a claw machine. I said, why don't you just build it? So he got an S-hook, put a piece of yarn on it, and then put a little track on top of the box. And I said, what the heck? He figured out how to make a claw machine with a string and a hook.
And here's some sunglasses. These are the glasses I like the most. Store sunglasses.
He bought calculators to put on every arcade game. And I go, what's that for?
The calculators are here for security to see if it's a real fun pass or not. On the back, the fun pass has a security number. So when you go here, you have to turn around, you put the pin number in it, and you push a check mark button, and the big number comes out. That's how you know it's a real fun pass.
My dad started the business in 1955. We have used auto parts. Most of our business has gone online because we really don't get the walk-up traffic like we used to. So Kane's chance of getting one customer is pretty hard. Kane's always waiting in front, sitting on his little chair, and trying to convince people to play, but not too much luck.
Kane's Arcade grand opening.
But he never gets discouraged. He's always sweeping up and dusting off the games, waiting for customers. He only wears his shirt on Saturdays and Sundays when he comes to open up his arcade. And he's really proud of his shirt because he thought it up and he designed it. When Kane got back to school from vacation, he started telling everybody that he had an arcade. And nobody believed him. So he won't wear his shirt to school because he's afraid the kids might tease him about it. You know, he told them, hey, I got my own arcade. And they go, yeah, sure. Well, one day, my secretary comes running into the office. George, you never believe it. somebody's playing Kane's Arcade. And I go, no way. So I was looking through the security camera, watching them.
And I'm playing like miniature soccer, miniature basketball. And then when you'd score a point, he would crawl into the box and he pulls out these little tickets out of the side of the cardboard.
Like real arcade games, tickets come from the bottom.
And I was like, this kid's a genius.
Nirvan came back one day when Kane wasn't here, and he told me, you mind if I make a short film about Kane's Arcade? I said, well, actually, it's kind of like a little joke around here, because you're his only customer.
I was blown away. Kane's only sold one Fun Pass. Like, the Fun Pass is an awesome deal.
So Nirvan said, well, what if I can get him a couple customers? And I said, that would make his day. If you can get him one customer, he'll be happy.
And at that point, we hatched a plan to invite everybody in L.A. to come play Kane's Arcade. The idea was to do a surprise flash mob at Kane's Arcade on Sunday afternoon.
And I'm thinking, who's going to come down to a junkyard Sunday afternoon, East L.A.? Who's really going to show up?
Then I made a little Facebook event, which a friend posted on Hidden L.A., which has over 230,000 fans. And all of a sudden, it just started going viral.
Nirvan put it over the internet. And all of a sudden, within an hour, we had NBC News here.
Then I hit the front page of Reddit, which is like being on the front page of the internet.
I started reading the comments. I wish I could be there. I live in New York. I wish I could be there. I live in Europe. And I'm like, wow. It was getting big. The plan is I'm going to take Kane to Shakey's Pizza. We're going to play some arcade games. We're gonna eat lunch while Nirvan sets up a big surprise party. Kane has no idea what we're doing. And when we get back, he's had the biggest surprise of his life.
And the idea is just to get as many people as we can to come out to Kane's Arcade and just make his day.
Kane's dying to have one customer show up to his arcade. So Kane is to be the most surprised little boy in the whole wide world. Hey, you ready?
In about a minute, he's gonna arrive here.
Hey, Kane, can we go home early today? We had no customers today.
No.
No? Come on. Your dad's tired.
No can do.
No can do. Back, Kane. Wow. What's going on over here? Huh? We finally got some customers here.
Kane, this is everybody. All these people came here to play your arcade. Did you know they were coming?
No.
Are you ready to run your arcade?
Yeah.
All right, what'd you guys come here to do?
We came to play!
Go ahead, welcome to Kane's Arcade, man.
But the eight could also be for auto parts, cause it's pop shops where it's made. And the I's gotta be for imagination, of which the kids got a lot. In the end, ought to be noggin, where the idea first got thought. But then the E.
Oh, yes, the E.
Oh, yes, the E.
Oh, yes, the E.
Well, the E's gotta be for everybody.
Yes, you and me.
Cause everybody's who's invited to come on down and play. If you got the pluck to try your luck, come on down to Kane's Arcade. Oh, Kane's Arcade.
Kane's Arcade.
Oh, Kane's Arcade.
Kane's Arcade.
It's the best cardboard arcade ever been made.
Ever made.
Grab yourself a fun pass and y'all come on down and play. If you got the pluck to try your luck, get on down to Kane's Arcade.
I've seen that many, many times now, and wow, that just gets me. Would you stand with me for a second? Wasn't that awesome? I want to close by reading to you some words from a guy by the name of William Hutchinson Murray. And Murray was this Scottish mountaineer and writer, and he's got an intriguing story. He wrote an autobiography entitled The Evidence of Things Not Seen. And he once wrote these words that I think are great parting words for us today. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans, that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events issued from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents and meetings and material assistance, which no man could have dreamed would have come his way. Listen to these. Whatever you can do or dream you can do, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. Begin it now. So may we step out of this place and into 2.0. You are dismissed.